What's going on, everyone? Welcome to Talking Baseball. We hope you're doing well. We got a nice, fun conversation with David Dahl coming your way. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Talking Baseball. My name is Jimmy. I've got Trevor with me. I've got Jake with me, producer BBD in the home plate. And we are excited to bring you another conversation with an MLB player. This time we got all-star David Dahl. And I think something I'm not embarrassed to say is I didn't know much about Dahl when beforehand, and then we started doing our research, and I was like, damn, this guy, whenever he plays, has great numbers. Baseball is such a hard sport right now to get become a household name. Like, he was an all-star, and in parts of three seasons, there's some injuries and shortened seasons, but, like, his numbers are great. So, Jake, how much – you're a Rockies guy. How much of the Dahl fanhood were you before this interview?
Yeah, man. I mean, again, you know, I kind of get into some of the prospect stuff, and he was a big prospect, and like he talked about a little bit. I mean, he was the dude. Like, he was his. He gets drafted, and then he's the short season MVP, and we got a fun story about his minor league career coming through that. But man, he really is a dude you should know, and it also kind of turns into kind of the NBA effect that I talk about with baseball a little bit. How like. If an NBA team comes to town, you know, they're one or two guys normally. The Rockies kind of already have that, though. Like, you know Arenado. You know Story. You know Charlie Blackman. He's got the big beard. He's, you know, they play the song when he comes up. David Dahl is going to be a part of that, man. And that's where I get excited about my Rockies because, man, when that lineup's right, like, people need to know about Dahl, and they have this good lefty-righty balance that – I mean, that lineup will wear you out. And he's a really good young baseball player that you're right. More people need to know.
Trev?
I mean, I knew who he was. And getting to talk to him is pretty cool. Like, he's a very laid back dude. And you can tell he takes baseball very seriously. And he'll tell you a story of kind of how he maybe got on that path, which I thought was funny. So, good dude. I think, you know, as we're doing more and more of these interviews, I think it's kind of like the general gist of all of these players is like they're just good guys who happen to be blessed in a certain sport and have worked their ass off. And it's really cool just to hear everyone's individual story.
Yeah. All right. Let's just throw it straight to the little chat we had. A little warning, the internet got incredibly bad at the tail end of this. We tried to do some figuring out or whatever, but hopefully we can edit around it as much as we can. But if you do hear some awkward silences or some bad internet, you've been warned.
We are joined by father of rookie, the golden retriever, and all-star outfielder for your Colorado Rockies, David Dahl. David, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
One day at a time, man.
Yeah,
one
good day enough. At a time. Crazy. We say it every time, like, stuck in this apartment. I went outside today already, so that's a win. But we're in New York City, and it's just...
Yeah, it's bad there.
Yeah. It's just, you know, there's no lawns. There's no nothing. So it's boring.
But, you guys have a huge thing called Central Park. Is that closed? Like, they roped that off or what?
Well, they put a hospital in the middle of it. So, like, at some point, it was kind of scary. It was like, that's where they're sending the sick, like, avoid the park. But Jake lives close to there. I don't live close to Central Park.
Yeah, I have a golden doodle, David. Enough about us, but yeah, I bring him there. That's usually my once a day if it's nice weather. What are you doing? Are you getting outside daily? Are you getting your workouts outside? Are you got other Rockies you're doing stuff with, or what have you been up to?
It's kind of just me solo right now, but I'm getting outside. I'm working out. Hitting every once in a while, whenever I can, in a cage with the guy I hit with, just, you know, me and him, socially distancing. Have a place to work out. Luis Gonzalez's house. He's letting me use his weight room, so I go in kind of by myself at a certain time. do my workout, clean everything off, wipe everything down, and, you know, then I leave. I don't really see anyone. But yeah, able to get my work in. It's getting really hot out here though, so try to get it all in kind of earlier in the morning, because, you know, it's been like 105 out here right now.
Are you just doing T work, or are you? I mean, do you have a pitching machine as well, or how are you getting the work in by yourself?
Yeah, I got a hitting guy where his name's Trent Otis. Me and him go hit, and we do some stuff off the tee, and then he flips to me, throws.
Okay.
And then he goes to the back of the cage lately, and we've been trying to kind of make it more game like, where he goes to the back of the cage and just lets it, you know, fastball, curveball, change up, like throws everything without telling me, just to at least try to stay somewhat sharp and, you know, make sure whenever we do start back, I'm ready to go.
How's his stuff? You ever give him like a nice swing and a miss on the curve and say, good,
actually,
nice,
man? There's times where I'm like, okay, I might need to go get my foot guard here, because I'm about to foul the curves off my foot. He throws some good stuff.
That's awesome. Man.
Sounds are you talking fun. 50 yabos, Luis Gonzalez? You're using his facility? That's pretty. Are you getting magic off the walls and stuff, or what?
Let me. So I actually his son, Jacob. I hit with this offseason a lot with Trent, and we used his place. So I became pretty close with them, and they just they're letting me kind of use their little weight room outside. They have a warehouse in the back with a weight room in a cage. Like it's really nice, but I'm thankful they're allowing me to use it. And got to be smart though, and I'm literally, after I work out, I'm wiping everything down with, you know, I gotta make sure we're being safe and healthy.
What are the non-baseball activities during quarantine for you? Netflix or reading or video games?
I've been playing MLB The Show. I did the Players League, which I was terrible at. So now I'm doing a Road to the Show. I got it on the easiest you can have it. So I created David Dahl Jr. And nice. he's just tearing the league up right now.
There you go.
And then I'm just hanging out. I got a pool outside, so I'm just a lot of time at the pool.
Gotta have the pool. Pool is so key right now.
Yeah, especially in Arizona.
Yeah, 105. You need a release from that.
It's crazy. Yeah, for sure.
Who got you in the Players League? Like who?
I think it was more so my wife. I started playing, you know, nothing to do. So I just started playing MLB The Show. And I've played it in the past, but nothing like not competitive or anything. I usually just, you know, it's usually when I'm hurt, then I'll just play my season out online.
I get your fix.
Yeah. So I was just playing it, and my wife kept posting stuff of me playing it. And I think they just, I guess, did their research and saw that I played it or something and wanted me to represent the Rockies, which, you know, I'm not like a huge gamer or anything, so I was kind of surprised. And I know John Gray is a big gamer, so I felt like he done a little better than me. But yeah, I went like 6-23 or something in the Players League. It was bad.
Yeah. That's all right. That's all right.
It was definitely fun. It was fun to, you know, live stream Twitch. It's my first time doing all that, so interacting with fans. It's fun. I would do it again though.
You know what though? Like you might have went 6-23, but you're like an actual real all-star. So you can always just be like, in real life, I'm really good.
Yeah, for sure. But it's pretty accurate because everyone tells me like, stop swinging at everything on the game. You know, they were telling me, I was like, have you watched me play? I swing at everything in real life too. So it actually was kind of real life right there.
Does your wife push you? Did she push you into the league? Because I know she does marketing stuff. She's with some pretty connected people. Has she been like,
hey, put like, yourself hey, out there.
Sure. Is that why you're here?
She definitely posted about it. And then she kind of convinced me to do it. Because at first I was like, I don't know. And she's like, oh, that'd be good for you. So I decided to do it. But she definitely was the reason why I did it. Definitely helped my, I guess, my brand and stuff. I got a little more following after that.
Love that.
It's what MLB needs. Like I'm sure the MLB The Show people were like, finally, we've been trying to get you to do this for so long. And it is cool to see the players actually like interact. Like, you know, the Snell was all over it because he won. It's interesting.
He played me and he killed me. And I started just throwing at all his guys. I just started hitting all of them. Where I was like, I can't beat him, so I'm just going to drill.
Yeah, you know, if you like are facing a guy and he's got like a super cool chair and like really good headphones and like a background, you're probably screwed. Like, so those
I'm playing in the living room. I'm sitting on my couch. The TV's like 15 feet away from me using the big screen. And then I'm playing Snell. He's in like a little office on a little computer, headphones. Like, it's his gaming room. I'm like, all right, yeah, this is going to go well for me.
I'm so unfamiliar with MLB The Show. I'm not a video game guy. But when the Madden scores come out, football players have responded like, oh, what, I'm only an 80 speed or whatever that. Is that exist in the baseball world? Like, Trev, and when you guys are playing, like, do you guys look at your own ratings?
I never really looked at it until I started playing this, and I was pretty upset with where they had my speed, to be honest. They had me at a 65 speed, which felt like I should be higher than that, but maybe I just need to go out and steal more bags to get it up.
Yeah, you got to pay off the right people. Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at it. It was 4 stolen bases last year and 4 caught stealing, so I think they...
It wasn't good.
Your fault, though. That doesn't mean you're slow. It just means that that's the game now. Nobody steals bases.
I tried to steal on JT Realmuto, and he just always...
Don't do that.
So, like, oh, I got this, and I'm sliding in. The ball's right there. But I think, too, when you're hitting in front of, you know, Nolan and you got Charlie coming up, you don't want to just run into outs, really, I feel like.
That's the game now, too,
smart when you got, like, 3 other All-Stars hitting behind me, so it's you got to be... Gotta be smart out there.
I wanted to ask you about that because I lived in Denver for the past 3 years or so. I won't say my sleeper team, but I was there. I was in it. I am a Yankees fan. I'm sorry. But I love the Rocky Stadium. I hype that lineup all the time because people don't know how good that lineup is. Do you feel like, or do you have a preferred spot in that lineup? Do you want those guys behind you so you know pitchers are going to give you something to hit? Or do you want to drive in runs? Like, what do you have a mindset, or just put me in?
Honestly, it's kind of whatever they need me to do. I think this year they were talking about leading. You know, I might have been leading off this year, so that's still a possibility. I think they want it like me and then Story, maybe Charlie Nolan or something like that. And then in the past, I've hit third, I've hit second, so it really doesn't matter. I like being at the top, obviously, like kind of up there in the order because you're sandwiched in between those really good hitters. So I felt like, especially when I was hitting like 2 or 3 and I have, you know, I was getting pitches to hit. They're not going to let Story, Charlie, or Nolan beat them. They're going to come after the guy in the middle. So I feel like I get a lot of pitches to hit that way, and it definitely helps me and it elevates my game.
When you came up, I mean, you talked about, you know, your guy likes to swing. When you came up, you get a hit in your first game, and then you go on a 17-game hitting streak, which, Plouffe, you said ties the record.
Yeah, it ties.
Was that, like, that feeling? Did you feel like, oh, this is easy? Or were you kind of perplexed? Or how did that, like, the 2 weeks feel?
That's insane. That's insane.
Never was easy. This game's hard, man. I came up at a time where I was feeling really good. I went from AA, and then I got promoted to AAA, and something just clicked to where I was. Now, I've never been locked in like that. And I think I was in AAA for, like, 17, 18 games or something. They called me up. So it was, like, the hottest I've ever been. And when I was going through that, it was pretty surreal, like, you know, facing Bartolo Colon, DeGrom, Syndergaard, Matt, like really good pitchers. And, you know, I was able to compete, get some hits off of them. And then I was never thinking about the hitting streak. Like, I never really thought about it until the game where I could have broke the record playing the Phillies. And I think it was I think it was him catching, and I come up to the plate, and, you know, it's my first at bat, and the guy, he's talking to me, and he's telling the umpire, oh, this guy's going for the record today. Like, I struck out, I think, 3 times. I was swinging at balls that were bouncing in the dirt, like trying to get this hit. And, you know, the one game I started to think about it was the game that I lost it. So, but it was a fun time. It was cool to look back on.
That's incredible, dude. Like, thinking about coming up and 17 straight games just getting that knock. Like, talk about, like, feeling settled right away. Like, a lot of guys, I know Steven Vogt was, like, 0-for-30.
Yeah.
It
gave me a lot of confidence to think that, okay, I can stick up here. I can compete. You know, I feel like I belong up here. And that definitely gave me a lot of confidence. So, And, you know, our coach at the time, Walt, I thank him a lot. He gave me the opportunity, he played me. It was awesome.
When I was just looking, I was going through your game log in the minor league to see if the streak continued, if it was like longer, if you combine them. But anyway, I saw the game before you got called up, you had 4 hits. Did you walk into the office and like, all right, guys, come on. Or did you have any sense?
No, it was actually, we were in Fresno, and after that game, the next day was a day game. So I'm preparing to get ready. And we actually had a Forbes come into town. It was a front office in the front office. He was there, which I thought it was kind of weird that he was in Fresno for some reason. And he was there the night before where I got 4 hits. But the next day I come in, I'm getting ready to play the day game. I literally walk out to the field, get ready to stretch. And Glenn Allen Hill was our manager. Love him. He's the best. And he was on the phone. And I thought that was kind of weird. And he said, and he stopped. He actually stops me. He's like, hey, he's right here. And he hung up and they called me in the office and called me and told me about it. But he was messing with me and was like, I think you got traded, like just messing around with me. And then he brought me in the office. He was like, you know, you're getting the call up. And it was very cool. Something you remember the rest of your life.
Awesome. Yeah. And then, I mean, your third game, you're in the 2-hole. So you like playing at the top of the order. I think like 10 games in, you're leading off. Oh, so you got there pretty quick.
Yeah, I still remember my first game in the big leagues against Gallardo. He was throwing like up shoot cutters, kind of like just high. And I remember, I think my first 2 at bats, I struck out both times on like 6 pitches or something. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm about to go back to AAA. And then the next at bat, my third at bat, I get the 2 strikes again. And I'm like, the hat trick, my first game, this isn't going to be good. And thankfully, I got a knock and was able to move past all that.
Yeah.
Do you see Gallardo, Trev?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like, yeah?
I faced him a lot. He was with the Brewers and then Baltimore.
Yeah, I faced him with the Orioles.
Yeah, he's a guy. I mean, he does. He has that fastball that kind of rides up, and he's a spot guy, and he's got a good change. I mean, he's a good pitcher. Man, he had a really good career. He's in the book. If that's what you're asking, Jake, he's in the book a couple he's times. All right,
that's
dude.
That's all I was asking. That's all I was asking.
So it's a big book. It's like the only thing I did well. All right.
Slightly bigger than mine. David, I want to ask you this, and this might be a guy you're familiar with, Mike Tauchman, who's on the Yankees now. He has amazing splits versus lefties, and so do you. And we actually talked to him down at spring training, and he broke it down again. I don't know if you know him. He can get pretty intense, but he kind of gave his whole approach. Do you have a certain approach versus lefties, or have you always been kind of split proof your whole life, or how does that work for you?
Yeah, I know Tauchman really well. He played with the Rockies, obviously, in AAA and in the big leagues with us. So I've known him for a while. He's always been a great hitter. He doesn't chase anything. He doesn't swing bad pitches. So he's always had a really good eye at the plate, always been really good. For me, I think I've always, even righties and lefties, my approach is pretty similar. I'm always thinking oppo, like left center gap, like drive something that way. The guy's throwing a little harder, I might shift a little more over to center. But for lefties, though, like it really doesn't matter who's on the mound. I'm trying to go left center, like line drive over short, really, just so I can stay in there and not fly open, because you know that's what they're usually trying to do. The guys that are tough are the ones that can run sinkers in. Those are the tough, really tough lefties. But my approach has always just been oppo gap, left center, stay inside the ball, and then if something's in, just try to react to it and not panic and fly open.
When you look at splits for Rockies guys, there's always the Coors Field stuff, and we talked to a bunch of what's the name of the guys in Colorado, Jake, that we're friendly with?
They're DNVR now. I forget what they used to be.
Like BS and some weird acronym. We asked them what it meant, and they said it's just random letters. So it's hard to remember. But anyway, they told Jake and I, like, actually, there's the reverse Coors Field effect. Like, when guys go on the road, it's actually harder to hit because there's just constantly the changing. Is that something that's actively on your mind? Like, when you come up, do hitters talk about that? Is there anything that you do, like, differently or know about?
Yeah, it's definitely – it's real. Like, it's hard when you spend a whole week or 10 days at home and you're seeing, you know, you're in altitude, the ball just doesn't break as much. You know, you're seeing curveballs and they're not as sharp, or the ball's not running as much. So you swing at some pitches where you can still get to, and you can still get a knock because the outfield's so big. And then you go on the road, say to like San Fran or something, and you swing at a breaking ball and it's bouncing in the dirt, and you're like, whoa, like I just, you know, because in Denver you were still able to get it because it hung up just a little bit. So the ball just moves a lot more when you're on the road. So the way we've been kind of towards the end of last year, I think it was like in DC or New York, we started talking, like really just trying to talk about it. And Charlie Blackman actually came up, had a great idea about, now we simulate the pitcher we're facing that night in the cage or on the field pregame or something. And we put the machine on and we simulate his fastball or his breaking ball, his slider. So we're getting pretty much like competitive at bats in before we're even in the game. So it's helping us kind of adjust quicker. And I think when we started doing that, a lot of guys really bought into it, and their road numbers definitely went up a lot more, because it's tough. It's something we have to deal with, and you know, it's part of it, but we're doing whatever we can to figure out ways to accelerate that process and try not to, you know, where it takes three games to get right.
You can, the machines can simulate like certain pitchers stuff.
Yeah,
like you can like,
yeah, we'll get like their spin rate and we'll simulate it, like all the, they know how to do all that. I don't know how to do it.
That's fucking crazy. You like, you simulate Kershaw's curveball, and then you guys are just like, ah, fuck that, like let's
we simulated a Scherzer's slider in the cage before we faced him, and I went in there and I got swung and missed at like almost every one of them. I'm like, maybe I just shouldn't swing at that pitch.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Dude, if you do that and you like crank these machines up and you try, you're trying to simulate these guys' pitches, the machine is nastier than the actual pitch. Like something about like the timing, like
the timing and stuff. Yeah.
Like you guy putting the ball in the machine, or like the red, yellow, green light, like you just can't synchronize your timing yet for it. Like I think that is a really good drill to do, but it will beat you down mentally. Yeah. Like you have to like say, okay, I'm probably not going to hit these well, but I just need to see it.
Yeah. What I do is I usually, you know, I'll track like in my regular stance, and I do a lot of work from, I call it like your launch position, like the position you want to get to kind of, and I just sit there on a machine. I'll usually just kind of sit there, be relaxed, and just try to be quick from there.
Okay.
It takes away my leg lift and everything, so I don't really have to time it up. I can just work on being quick, and I can still see the ball. So I usually do a lot of like machine work just from like the launch position instead of, you know, trying.
That's
to, like,
good.
Yeah.
It takes that timing.
Once you get dominated a lot by the machine, you're like, because then you start thinking like, man, is this making me better or worse? Or like,
I know.
Start getting in your head a little bit. So. But we've kind of accepted that. Like, I'd rather get dominated in the cage than go out and get dominated for three straight games on the road. So.
Yeah, I'm thinking about guys whose stuff isn't, like, nasty. Like, if you have a Lance Lynn who throws three different fastballs, you simulate that in the cage and just, like, have a day. Then go out on the field and like, wait, how is he actually making this work, though?
Yeah.
Like, Tanaka's another one of those guys where, you know, he's just so good at the placement. That's funny. Yeah. I never even know that was a thing.
Bueller, you know, guys with the spin rate heaters, we'll simulate that too, just to see how much like it's taken off. And because, you know, Bueller is a guy he's tough to hit, especially in LA.
Hey, you're not talking about, there's like not a machine that you can actually input spin rate into. You're just kind of trying to meter it.
I think we have like analytic guys and stuff that have all the, I don't think they type it into the machine, but I think they have like the spin radar, like all that kind of stuff that they can set up. And
I guess that's right. Yeah. Some cameras or something.
They have it set up before we really even get there. But, you know, it was something Charlie really, like, he was tired of us just, him, us, we're just getting beat down on the road. So this is something like, I think if our whole org or whole team buys in and really starts to do it, I think our numbers will be a lot better on the road.
Yeah, that's awesome. Cool.
I got. Okay, go ahead,
Jay. You're there.
I don't know if you want to answer this, but as we're doing research for this interview, we're looking up, you know, some stuff, and on your Wikipedia page, it talks about a pretty sad day for you, I'd imagine. In the lower level minor leagues, you missed a flight.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that, or is that you don't want to go into that?
mean, it's in the past. It's something that happened. I can talk about it. Yeah, it was more just I was stupid. I had my birthday at the end of spring. I went out with a bunch of the guys, and I'd never really, you know, done any of that. And then I ended up just, I couldn't wake up from my flight. And I, the next day or later that day, I actually bought my own ticket to get to Asheville. So I red-eyed it out there, made it to practice and everything, and played the first game. And I'm like, all right, I'm good. And then after the first game, I go 0 for 4, 3 punchies. Called in the office, and they're like, hey, you know, we know why you missed your flight, this and that. And they sent me back to extended for like 3 weeks.
Oh my gosh. Man, that seems harsh, dude.
That flight back was, oh, it was embarrassing. I've never been so embarrassed about, you know, something like that, especially because it's all in the media. Why I got, like, I remember it was on the bottom. It was on ESPN, the ticker on the bottom.
Damn.
What?
Yeah, it was crazy. But it's a learning experience. I mean, you gotta, unfortunately it happened to me, but I learned a lot from it.
Dude, I feel like everybody has a similar story. I mean, that just happens. You're in the minor leagues, especially those flights. I mean, what time was the bus to the airport? Probably like 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning or something.
Yeah, so everyone was kind of just like, we'll just go out and hang out and not sleep. And then I've never been a guy that does that. I was only 19, so
That's so 19, messed up. So
that's a big reason why. I was underage.
Trevor, you mentioned everyone has a story like that. I mean, we have a guest on our show. Could you make him feel a little better with maybe a story of your own?
Trevor's already told us that he loved when he got cut from spring training because then he could go to the wet t-shirt contest.
That was a booty shaking contest, Jim.
Ah, same thing.
No, look, everybody does. I've missed buses before, and then, yeah, you just got to figure out a way to get there. I actually didn't play in the leagues really where you flew a lot. So I can understand, like, dude, those buses are very early. And if you do decide, hey, like, it's always a dumb decision to say that, like, let's just stay up all night. That's never a good plan. So, I mean, I've missed buses. I know a lot of people who have missed plane rides and bus rides. It's a common thing. So I don't want you to feel bad about it. Obviously it's in the past, but that's a lonely feeling, dude. When you wake up, what time was it when you woke up?
It wasn't too far. Like, my friends were trying to get me up. I just couldn't get up. Yeah. And then, so I'm in the extended for like 3 weeks, and I finally get to go back to Asheville, and 9 games back I tear my hamstring. And I used to be a guy that would eat horrible. Like, so when I got drafted, I went to the Pioneer League in rookie ball, and I ended up like playing really well, like killing it. I think I was the MVP of the league or short season. So I'm in my head, I'm like, okay, this is, you know, I'm an 18-year-old, I'm an idiot, I'm like, I'm gonna be in the big leagues next year.
You're the best.
Pretty easy. And then that was a very humbling, like, you know, eye-opening experience. You know, I get demoted for disciplinary reasons, and then I come back, and I was eating bad, and I actually had a bag of like sweet tarts in my back pocket. I tear my hamstring.
Oh my god!
Like, no one really knows about this, but yeah, I was an idiot back then, and I had to grow up, and I learned a lot of it the hard way, and I missed the whole year that year in 13. So I only played like 10 games. But, you know, that's part of the reason why I am who I am today.
Yeah, you turn a negative into a positive. And again, I'll keep saying, like, a lot of guys, you have to have those wake-up calls, especially for a young guy. You were drafted out of high school. You come in, you ball out. You're MVP of the Pioneer League. Like you said, you're like, nothing's going to faze me. Exactly. And sometimes you need something like that, you know, to kind of get your mind back on track. And now look.
I had to get humbled for sure. So it humbled me and
that's awesome.
Kind of crazy stories. No one really knows about the hamstring with the sweet tarts in the back. Like, I thought I was a genius because I was like, I'm gonna be in the outfield just eating sweet tarts, hanging out. Like, and then I tried to leg out an infield single, and there went my hamstring.
Oof, that's funny, man. That's really funny.
And then, but then last year you find yourself in the All-Star game. So, you know, journey gets you there. Yeah. What was that like? What was like when you found out you were going? And then walking into the clubhouse.
Yeah, I had a feeling that I had a chance. I thought I had a chance to make the All-Star team, but I wasn't sure just because I knew, you know, Trevor and Nolan and Charlie were going to make it. So I didn't know if they were going to take like 4 guys on one team, especially position players. But we get there. I think we were playing the Dodgers that day, and it was a day game. And I'm rolling out in the weight room, like stretching, getting ready, and so is Charlie. And Bud walks in, and he has a conversation with Charlie over there. And I'm like, all right, he definitely just told him he made the All-Star team.
come on.
And then, I thought he turned, and he like started walking out. And I was like, this sucks. And then back over, he's like, David, come with me. I was like, oh, okay. And then I was so nervous. I was like, you know, he takes me into the office, and on the TV behind me was the All-Star game red carpet it was talking about. And Bud goes, have you ever watched the red carpet, you know, for the All-Star game? I was like, yeah, I watched it. It's pretty cool. He goes, well, you're going to be in it this year. You made the All-Star team. And I was like, I didn't know what to say. I was speechless. Awesome. You know, he gave me a hug, told me, you know, I worked really hard for it. I deserve it. And, hey, sorry, rookie's chewing the back of the chair right now. sorry. Yeah, it was. I was speechless, and then they announced it during the game, and you know the place. It was really cool, and being at the All-Star game, I think it was when it really hit me, when I was like, wow, I'm here right now. Like, this is pretty cool. Was when Dave Roberts called like a team meeting, and he's like, you know, just look around, and you know, you guys deserve this. You guys made it. I'm just looking around, and it's all like the best players, you know, in the NL, and then across the way was all the AL players, and I was just like, wow, this is something, and it makes you want to be in it every single year once you experience it. Like, you want to keep working hard, and that's what Nolan told me. He's like, isn't this awesome, man? You want to be in this every year? I'm like, yeah, this is surreal.
Yeah, you got some.
Who was the one guy that you're like, holy crap?
Hello. Seeing Trout, sorry. Obviously across, you know, another, you know, he's best player, and just honestly, everyone, you know, Christian Yelich, he's a great player. I love watching him play. Acuna, all those guys, man. It's hard to choose just one. It was to be in a room with those guys was special.
It's true. When you step in the box, is it kind of, hey, I'm here, this is gonna be fun, or were you nervous in that moment as well? You did get a hit. The National League only got five hits, and you got one of them.
I really wasn't nervous because I faced Brad Hand, and I had faced him a lot when he was with San Diego, so at least I had a good idea of what he had. And it was something, you know, I was pretty relaxed, actually. I felt like I missed some pitches I should have crushed, but eventually I snuck in a little hit there, which was really cool, you know, batting 1,000.
That's awesome, dude, man.
That's the way to do it, man. That's the way to do it. Have you been able to, like, start thinking about this potential upcoming season yet? I know Trevor Plouffe was trying to break the news airwaves this week, and there's a lot of different rumors, but I mean have you thought about like a condensed season at all, or are you there yet, or are you just waiting for information and you're gonna go from there?
Yeah, I'm just waiting for the information, kind of getting the updates. Obviously I want to play. Like, I miss it. I'm, you know, I think all of us, you know, we want to play, we want to get out there and compete. I think that's the biggest, I miss competing against the best. And yeah, just trying to take it really day by day and make sure I am staying ready for whenever the time comes. That's kind of all I'm really thinking about.
I got one for you. So you grew up in Alabama, correct? Birmingham?
Yeah, Birmingham. Born in Montgomery, but, you know, grew up in Birmingham.
So why Auburn? Why not the Crimson? Like, is it just a family thing, or like, is it like, how did that happen?
Yeah, I grew up an Auburn fan. My family, Auburn fans, and that's the school I just really wanted to go to. But Bama actually offered me first, and I used that as leverage to get Auburn to offer me. that's where I wanted to go.
That's awesome.
I just grew up an Auburn fan. I was a big Auburn fan, so that's the main reason. And we actually had a good class coming in.
You spent a lot of time in Connecticut. Jake's a Connecticut lifer. We all lived in New Britain for a little bit, I think. And you were also with the Yard Goats. Did you have a favorite spot in Hartford or West Hartford when you were playing over there?
Actually, so when I played for the Yard Goats, we were on the road the whole year. I was, you know, I was there for like the first half of the season, but our home stadium was ready. So we actually played on the road the whole time. And got to experience playing some games without fans. We had to play some home games in New Hampshire, and the gates weren't open for any fans or anything. So it was literally like, you know, playing scrimmage games.
But you were saying that you spent that year in the minors on the road with no fans. I mean, you're going to have to be doing that probably coming up soon. Is that hard? Because Trevor was saying if it was him playing, he would need at least the fake crowd noise. Like, pump that in, do the fake cheering, the fake, like, charge noises. Did they do that for you in the minors? And if not, do you think that you need that in the majors?
Yeah, I think it's definitely – it was tough. But I think at this point, I think we're down to do anything right now. So I think we'd still be – the biggest thing is just getting the adrenaline and stuff going when you're playing with no fans. Because, you know, the fans really, really fire you up with the crowd and everything. So I think finding ways to get that adrenaline going, which I think, you know, maybe playing, you know, fake fan noise or something could help. But, yeah, in the minor leagues, they didn't do any of that. So it was definitely tough. But I do think with baseball, we've – been missing baseball so long, guys want to get out there. I think the juices will be going even if there's no fans.
When that first report leaks out about the Scottsdale bubble plan or the Arizona bubble, and it's talking about players getting isolated from their families and stuff, do you have a moment where you look at your wife and it's like, hey, might have to see you later? Or is it like, we got to have a discussion? Or how does that even go down? Because that's crazy.
I hope it doesn't come to that. That'd be tough, man, not seeing your wife or kids or family for, you know, what, 4.5 months. That won't be easy. So I hope it doesn't come to that. But, yeah, when that first was announced, I was like, oh, man, I don't know. That's going to be tough. So, but I think really I want to play, so I kind of will do anything, I guess, hopefully. But like I said, I just hope it doesn't have to come to that.
I think we're good. We're there. Trev, you got the scouting. You got the scoop. Home ballparks in Denver. No fans.
That's what I'm hearing. It's going to be majority home ballparks. But, you know, things could change rather quickly, especially in today's climate. So, I don't know. I just don't see how they would do that. And I think a lot of guys, yeah, they're like, yeah, we would do it because what other choice do we have? But I think obviously the general preference would be like, let's just – you know, get to our home cities and so we can be with our families. That's a big deal, man. You need that support. Yeah. Baseball's a lonely game.
Guys, I think, you know, someone like, I think Mike Trout's about to have his first kid. So that's something you don't want to be separated from that. You want to be able to be there for the birth of your first child and see your family during all that. So yeah, that's a lot of stuff that could happen. And hopefully I like the idea of the, you know, playing home ballparks. You know, I think that's something I would love to do.
Jake sent me a clip.
Especially hitting in Denver. You want to hit in Denver.
Yeah, for sure. Jake sent me a clip on Twitter where a fan responded to something like, show us all your bloopers or whatever. And then you responded with the blooper video. So I love it. Obviously, I think that's the way you win over everyone. But did you like text a video guy or did you just like edit that together? Your own little
blooper. I
just
went on and I had a lot of videos and stuff on my phone, so I literally just went on and put it together myself. I thought it was, you know, I think the guys tweeted me before too about making errors, so I was like, all right, I'll show like 5 really bad plays here and make fun of myself. It's already happened. I was embarrassed at the time, but like you said, you learn from all that stuff.
But also, I mean, that's just like great
the
engagement.
The most embarrassing was the wild card game. Yeah, the wild card game was definitely the most embarrassing one because obviously everyone was watching that one and I whiffed it. I thought I was going to make a really cool play. I'm running. I'm like, that ball's in the stands. I'm going to go take it out of the stands. And the wind blew it back and wasn't ready for that. So that was thankfully Freeland got the double play next pitch or next hitter. So it didn't matter.
Oh, that had to be such a huge sigh of relief when that double play gets turned.
I was like, oh man, but it kind of like I actually let that play affect the rest of my bats and stuff, which is bad. I went up there like trying to make up for it and doing too much, and I had a lot of opportunities where I could have, you know, helped the team win, and I would swing it like a first pitch and roll it over when it was a ball, or you know, so I let that kind of get to me a little bit, which, you know, it's like you said, you learn from it. It's playoffs, it's a different atmosphere.
Yeah, there's no better feeling or worse feeling if you make an error and then the pitcher picks you up or one of your teammates picks you up, you're just like, thank you so much. But a lot of times that doesn't happen. And you make that error, and all of a sudden there's a double and a homer, and it's just – that's a lonely, lonely feeling, man.
Yeah, for sure. Once – I think Rizzo hit into the double play after with and free, and I went up to him again. I was like, thank you so much. Like, you just helped me. Because it was a – it was like a one-run ball game, or like, I think it was tied or something. So – and I'm just getting – the fans are just wearing me out there, and I'm like, oh, can we just be – I'm like looking for the nearest exit. Like, how do I get out of here?
That's great, man.
So you edited it together because your wife tweeted out that you were searching for someone to teach you editing skills. Are you still on the hunt? Have you dove into any program?
Yeah. No, I haven't. It was more – I just get bored. I really just watch a lot of video of my swings. So I've been just putting all my swings on, like, you know, one video where it just shows a lot, and then just kind of, I haven't really looked into it too much. Right. It's something I just like making videos of swings because I love swings.
If you need any help, I'm here. It's been the only thing I do for like 10 years. So it's like that. One thing I can offer you. We'll get Premiere out. We'll go over it.
I guess my final question is, final question for me is, how do you like Denver, man? Like I said, I lived there for 3 years. I lived right by the ballpark for a little bit. I live by the country club, and I mean, man, I love that damn city. Do you have any restaurants or any bars you want to shout out? Maybe they'll throw you a couple drinks or something.
Yeah, I love STK there. That's a good spot. Really, I eat more at the field though. I don't eat too much, but I love the city itself. Like it's beautiful. It reminds me when you're walking, you know, through downtown and stuff. It reminds me like a movie set because it's so like clean and just like it's a beautiful city, and I love being there.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate you coming on and hanging out with us, man. This is awesome.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. Hopefully it's not too, you know, the video and stuff. It's a little, my Wi-Fi was kind of bad today.
Well, no, we got it, man.
We got editors.
Hey, and if you love watching videos, I don't know if you heard, I got a show that we watch videos on. We can go over the swings and do all that. I'd love to have you on.
Oh, you had you had Christian Yelich on the other day, right? I was planning on listening to that today.
He's pretty good.
I actually talked to Christian about I've talked to Christian about like you know, what he changed, or because I remember when he made that when he stood a little taller, more narrow, he was coming off an all-star game. And then the second half, you know, his MVP year, he just changed in the second half to a little more narrow. So I talked to him about it a little bit, like, hey, you already were having success coming off an all-star game. What made you change? Were you a little hesitant to make any adjustments? And, you know, I picked his brain a lot, and especially when at the all-star game and texting him a little bit. So it's something I'm going to go watch that for sure.
Yeah, cool. It's really good. I won't give it away because everyone will go watch Sequence, but Yelich says that he went into that All-Star game feeling like he wasn't having a good season, which only, I think, a very remote, small amount of baseball players can go into an All-Star game not happy with their season. Yeah. That's crazy. But, yeah.
Yeah, he goes into detail with it, and it was awesome. But, yeah, if you're a guy that loves to pour over your video, I'd love to have you on, man. So we'll have to link up.
Definitely, just let me know. I'll get on.
Cool.
Well, for sure. Awesome. All right. Thank you, man. We appreciate it. We'll catch up with you down the road somewhere.
Thanks, brother. Maybe.
And there you have it. Big thank you to Dahl for joining us and sharing part of his story and all that. Like the 17-game hitting streak is hilarious. That he didn't really think about it until the catcher said it. What a job by that catcher.
Just get in his head.
Yeah.
It's fun. Unreal.
It worked. It broke up the streak. He didn't get the record.
Move. He said he did say in there that he thought it was Cameron Rupp. It was Cameron Rupp. I can confirm that.
Confirmed.
I have a Cameron Rupp reference. Okay. When I asked for my release in a Texas organization, Cameron Rupp took over my apartment for me. So thank you, Cameron Rupp. That was nice of you.
That was very kind. Do you think he redecorated? Do you think he hated your feng shui?
Oh, no. I had like that like rent-a-furniture. That's the worst. So like I'm sure he just kept that. No, like you have to get these places furnished, and it's like the worst furniture. It's like, I don't know, man. Anyways, it's a big help to me. So thanks, Cam.
Cool. Wow. Yeah. All right. I think that's everything we got here for you today. Hopefully we get some more fun news. I don't know. This is delayed from the time we're recording it, so there could be crazy news. Anyway, we're out. Thank you guys very much. We will see you next episode. I think this is a Friday episode, so we'll see you Monday. Have a great weekend.